You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 10th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us on what is just another gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area. Sun is shining. There's even a little bit of a breeze out there today as well, so we hope you're doing well. Hope you're enjoying this hump day, getting closer to the weekend. Christian, happy Wednesday, sir. How are you, brother?
Happy Wednesday. Happy to be here. Happy that you're here, man. We thought at lunch, man, there might have to be a new voice that was opening the show today.
I almost died. I almost choked and died today. I'm not going to say how or where or why, but my life flashed before my eyes.
Tears were in my eyes. Tears were falling. It was rough.
I
know the Heimlich, and it almost had to come out.
Shut up. No, you laughed. That's all you and our friend did was laugh when I was dying, spitting up chicken. I was on the verge of losing my life on a table at this restaurant, and you guys just laughed. So glad to know that's where we stand in our friendship.
Sure.
But other than that traumatic experience, we have a ton to get to on the show today. There's a lot going on as we now truly shift our focus to what's happening this weekend for Auburn and in college football as well, and I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun, man. We're talking about the mentality that Auburn needs to have for South Alabama here on Saturday. We've talked about the two wins that Auburn has had so far and how they're completely different mentalities. Everybody knew that Auburn was going to show up for Ball State just because it's that opener. You had the questions about Baylor, showing up for Baylor and the preparation and how that was going to look. You checked that off. You then, again, come back home and check off the win against Ball State, and now you kind of have that trap game, the game that Auburn has struggled with over the past couple of years. And if there's going to be a shift on the mentality of this program, of this team overall, it starts with a game like this and how important a game like this, maybe not for the record, maybe not for what you look in the box score afterwards, or you hope that that's not a major point of emphasis, but for so much when it comes to truly building confidence in handling your business when you should handle business. We're going to talk about that to start the show. For those that have not seen it, I'm sure there's a lot of people that already have, but we're going to play that Hugh Freeze audio. It's on the War Eagle Plus. They teased it with a little 45-50 second clip, the pregame speech before Ball State. And for those that have not heard it, it's actually incredible. Everybody on social media has taken it and run with it, and how you have not seen this version of Hugh Freeze quite yet, in Auburn, at least. It was year one of stay patient. Year two, we're almost there. And now you're in year three, which he asked for and people ridiculed for year three. But so far, we've seen a different side of Hugh Freeze, and we're going to dive into that on the positive side of things. Before we dive in to a conversation with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, we get to recap the game against Austin Peay against Georgia and Austin Peay. Not a very pretty game, both with weather and, again, the box score watchers that came and clicked on this game. But get his thoughts on why Georgia is okay, why they're just fine, before we preview Georgia and Tennessee. Get his thoughts on where Tennessee is going to try and attack Georgia and where Georgia needs to try and attack Tennessee. All of that before we dive into a nice conversation on the defensive side of the football, because Auburn holding a lot of records right now on the defensive side of the football, and how It's just not comparable at all to what we saw in 2024. All of that in hour number one before we get to Double D Wednesday here in hour number two.
Yep, so we got a lot to get to. Until we have our guests, though, phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. The number again, 334-321-1390. Give us a call. What's on your mind? How do you feel about this upcoming weekend? What would a successful weekend for Auburn football look like for you? That's what we want to hear from you. We want to hear it on the phone lines. We want to hear it or read it and see it in the text box as well, which is open at 334-784-1067. So this weekend, it's Auburn and it's South Alabama, 11:45 a.m. inside of Jordan-Hare. Auburn's 2-0 and should be 3-0, right, in a game that you're comfortable. You're favored by, what, 24.5 or something like that now is what we're looking at. And so I'll turn that question to you, Christian. What does a successful weekend look like for Auburn?
Well, first I'll tell you how that should feel.
I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool. Pretty damn cool.
Woo! I love that clip.
Woo!
You're saying Auburn should be fired up? Auburn should be fired up to be there today, huh?
We're just fired
on
up
Saturday?
To be here.
I am
on
fired up.
Wednesday
I am fired up to be here today. That is my all-time favorite clip.
I meant
on
to
the
play
internet.
That. As soon as you started talking, but I forgot about it. But we have it now.
That's okay. That's why it's on there. We're leaving that, and it's never going away. So what does a successful weekend look like? What is a good game? What type of results would you want to see to where we come in here on Monday, and it's, all right, Auburn's 3-0, Auburn looks good, Auburn's confident for SEC play?
Yeah, I don't even think it necessarily goes into the factor of a result. I mean, the scoreboard would take care of itself if you're able to obviously take care of business, take care of the little things, do the little things right. But, man, it's just one of these games that feels like, again, everybody calls it that trap game, right? It's in between your home opener when everybody was there for a night game, everybody was fired up, and now you already have people asking Hugh Freeze about the Oklahoma game in a couple of weeks. That right there kind of gives you that mentality that this game is just kind of being pushed to the side. And, okay, let's go ahead and do what we need to do. Let's get this game over with inside Jordan-Hare so that way you can go ahead and prepare for Brent Venables. You can prepare for John Mateer and this defense and Norman with Jackson Arnold's return, right? That's going to be a very, very big storyline, and that'll be asked in the postgame presser after South Alabama, and then again, most likely on Monday. But it got asked it this week, and Hugh Freeze did a good job of not really giving into any sort of conversation on that, saying there's another opponent coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium, and you get seven of them this year, and you have to take advantage every single time when you step onto this field. This is the game that Auburn finds themselves struggling in over the past, what, decade? Where, man, you think of Jacksonville State, you think of New Mexico State, obviously.
Georgia State.
In there as well. Georgia State. There's so many of these games that it's either right after a big game or right before a big game where, yeah, that's fine. We're going to go through the motions. It's going to be fine. They're a lesser opponent. They're not going to think much about it. We're going to go through the motions and handle business. This is the first time that Auburn's playing South Alabama ever. And a lot of those kids, I guarantee you, would love to play inside Jordan-Hare Stadium and wear the orange and blue. And so you know that they are going to relish the opportunity. They're going to take every single moment and cherish it. So the term that this is their Super Bowl is very overrated in the terms of the sports world. But that's kind of the mentality that if you're the Jaguars, you're going to bring into this stadium and say, hey, we're going to take it quarter by quarter. We're going to take it play by play. And when you get to halfway through the third quarter, you get into the fourth quarter, let's see where we stand. Because over the past decade, this is a game that goes into the fourth quarter when it doesn't necessarily have to. So going back to answer your question after running with the question for a while, man. I'm not worried about covering a spread, all right? I'm not worried about making sure that you put up 30 points, right? You feel like those things should naturally happen if you continue to handle business, but it's this simple idea of not looking over any sort of opponent, right? Making sure that you continue to do the little things, not taking plays off on third down and 15 that extends drives for South Alabama, because you saw how quickly, and have seen how quickly, that can compound on you and compile, and all of a sudden there's a touchdown drive. The offense goes three and out, and now all of a sudden you're back in the football game if you're South Alabama. Then a touchdown drive again, and all of a sudden you're playing from behind.
Yeah, I mean, for me, just being completely honest here, I hate this type of game. I've mentioned it. I wish that between last week against Ball State, this week against South Alabama, and what you're going to play before the Iron Bowl in Mercer,
yes,
I've admitted, I wish one of these didn't exist. I wish this was another P4 game. I wish this, and in the future, this will be an SEC game, right? Because Auburn and the entire Southeastern Conference will be adding the ninth conference game, so one of these will go away.
And guaranteeing one other P4 game.
Yeah, I mean, I think you should play one of these games a year.
Yeah.
One of these games a year. For homecoming, for tune-up, however you want to describe it or use it, I don't really care. My take on this is a successful weekend for Auburn is this to look just as boring and plain as possible. For us to pretty much use Monday's show as like, yep, Auburn did this, Auburn did this, and Auburn did this. And by Tuesday of next week, we're talking purely Oklahoma.
Yeah, very similar to Auburn and Ball State, right, where – you didn't
even worse. I'm saying even more. Just plain boring. Just blah. I'm not saying it's got to be 75-0.
No.
But let's not make this a fourth quarter game either.
Right.
Let's not play with our food, because South Alabama is talented enough to hang around with some decent teams. They did it with Tulane a week ago. I just want it to be as plain, as simple, as straightforward as possible. Get in, get out. Don't be any more injured than you already are, right? We're going to talk about that as we go along today, but I want this to be as boring as physically possible.
Yeah, and again, that's, I mean, with the homecoming festivities, with this being a more family-friendly game, if you will, you feel like that's going to be the environment in Jordan-Hare. It's going to be a little bit more relaxed. You said it yesterday, just calling it like it is. The place is not going to be completely sold out just because it's that 11:45 kick in the dead of still basically summer outside in Auburn, Alabama. But going off of what you were talking about in this essentially being that second back-to-back tune-up game, that's where the trap game really comes into play, because at Ball State, everybody had premier focus because it was the first game back in Jordan-Hare, the first one to kick off the 2025 season after a really nice win in Waco, Texas that looks better and better week by week. Now all of a sudden there's that relaxing, that going through the motions, what DJ Durkin was talking about with the defense yesterday of just trying to light the fire of saying we're not going through the motions here on a Tuesday afternoon, but mentally you played sports, I played sports, everybody has played at some sort of level of, if you know back-to-back weeks the competition's not going to be superior, you feel like there's that mental letdown, right? Or that mental, again, going through the motions, and that's what is a little bit scary about this game, because you had that tune-up game against Ball State. You would love for it to be another big-time game that you have to have a full week of true preparation, of true focus, to where you go out inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, or if it was on the road, back on the road and play that public enemy rather than it being a game that you're highly favored in before a big-time SEC game.
I want to dive into the South Alabama team a little bit, because we could talk all day about, well, if Auburn takes care of business, they'll be fine and you should win this game, and what we're saying is true, but what exactly will Auburn be going up against with the South Alabama squad? It's a team that will bring in a 7-year senior at wide receiver. They're also bringing in a really talented running back and a junior quarterback, one that I think could do some damage this year. I really do think that Bishop Davenport is someone who Auburn needs to keep an eye on. He's 6'2", 210. He can sling it all over the yard, and he's just athletic. He is somebody that Auburn is going to get in front of. And then you have several SEC transfer guys on this South Alabama offense. There's an offensive lineman from South Carolina. Their running back is from Ole Miss. It's Kentrell Bullock. He's going to be the one that carries the rock for most of the time. This South Alabama team can move the football, Christian. Defensively is where they have a lot of their issues, especially in the run game, giving up big chunk plays and not being able to stop several backs throughout the football game. So Auburn very easily could find themselves in some sort of a shootout early, and that's not at all what the Tigers are wanting.
No, you mentioned Bishop Davenport, who I dove into a little bit yesterday, but he's 29 of 38 on the year, has 397 yards, completing 76% of his passes, averages 10.4 yards every time he drops back. It's pretty solid
chunk
for
plays.
A quarterback.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, a first down just about, again, on average. I understand that's not exactly how that works, but four touchdowns, does not have an interception, and has only been sacked twice against the Tulane front four and front seven that I think surprises a little bit of people. I think they struggle, but I think that's South Alabama going out and doing what they needed to do, getting the ball out of Davenport's hands. You mentioned Bullock, averages 5 yards a pop, has 234 yards on the ground already this season, three touchdowns. They have five rushing touchdowns as a whole. And again, they have their number one wide receiver as well, Devin Voisin, who
this
you mentioned.
This dude is good.
15 grabs for 221 yards, averages 14.5 yards per reception, has the long of 65 yards, and has three touchdowns. Two of them were against Tulane. So those two are definitely finding that rhythm from the quarterback spot to the receiver standpoint, but they have a couple other guys. Their tight end is their second leading receiver. It'll be interesting to see how Auburn decides to match up with that over the middle of the field, and we're going to dive into the Auburn offense, or the Auburn defense rather, here shortly. But yes, it's a team that does not necessarily care about time of possession. They don't necessarily care about controlling the tempo of a game. They want to get up on the ball, move the chains, and quickly snap the football again. It's a team that can move the ball down the field and can really punch you in the mouth if you take those one or two plays off on the defensive end of the field.
I think the mentality's got to be stop Devin Voisin, man. I mean, that dude is... he is their offense. He is the one where if they drop back to pass, they're looking for him. I mean,
he has half of their receiving yards.
Yeah, I mean, you said the tight end's the second on the team, but dude's got five catches on
yeah.
the year. Like, he's only caught the ball five times. That's not really a threat right now. And you feel that whatever type of defense Auburn wants to run, whether they just put your best corner on a one-on-one with Voisin, if they want to bring a safety over for extra help and make them throw it to somebody else, I don't know. But South Alabama can move, and you're right. They want to move quickly. They use those chunk plays, and they want to get down the field and score. Not that we don't trust Auburn's defense and DJ Durkin. What we're saying is there's playmakers for South Alabama offensively. They've scored over 30 points both times this year. They are willing to do that. They want to do that. I just don't think they're going to be able to stop Auburn's offense, which is banged up, and we're talking about that in just a moment. But I don't think that South Alabama defense is going to be able to keep up with what Auburn has offensively.
We talk about Bishop Davenport in the quarterback spot, and yes, he's 29 of 38 on the season, but it is a team that wants to gash you between the tackles and gash you out in space running the football. They average 191 rushing yards a game so far this season. They only average 202 through the air, and so they obviously want to use the run game. So if you're Auburn, yes, you're going to prioritize stopping the run, which Auburn has done incredible so far. I think they average 30 yards per game between the two games running the football or giving up 30 yards per game, again, giving up negative yards against Ball State. So if you can stop the run game on first down and second down, and then if you need to put that safety over top of Voisin just to make sure to try and limit any sort of threat that he has, that's where you're going to have big-time success on the defensive side of the field.
We're off and running here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We want to hear from you. What do you want to see this weekend between Auburn and South Alabama? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-13. 1390. We talk about Hugh Freeze and why he sounds and looks and maybe even feels just a little bit different this year than he has in the past. We talk about that next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, talking Auburn and South Alabama, talking Auburn in general, and a clip that went viral yesterday across Auburn social media platforms, Auburn football, and thanks to War Eagle Plus as well, put out a teaser for then what would be a 4 or 5 minute video. Of course, you could subscribe to War Eagle Plus and get all that content and stuff. But the teaser that they put out was part of Hugh Freeze's pregame speech to his team before the Tigers took on Ball State. And if you haven't heard it, it's incredible. We're going to play the 40 seconds of it that it is. The fact that this is a speech before Auburn plays Ball State.
Yeah.
Really speaks volumes to us, and I think it spoke volumes to most of the Auburn fan base as well, and showed a side of Hugh Freeze that, frankly, we just haven't seen since he's been on the plains. Here's part of his pregame speech before the Tigers took the field against Ball State this past Saturday.
If there's one thing that I could leave with you when you get through playing here, it would be that life is more about others than it is yourself. What buys long-lasting purpose is you understanding selflessness and it being about something bigger than yourself. And tonight, I submit to you that there's some family that drove from I don't know where, 5 miles out of the stadium, and they saved all freaking year long just to buy a ticket to climb to the top of that stadium and watch your tail play. You owe them something.
How about that?
Doggy.
How about that? It's a fire, Christian, that we just simply have not seen since he's been here. And I don't know if that is a new fire because of the talent on this team, the pressure he feels this year, or something in between all of that. But clearly that's something we have not witnessed or heard from Hugh Freeze in his 2.5 years that he's been on the plains.
No, and it was a video that we saw. It was during one of the commercial breaks yesterday, and I heard you click on it, and you watched. You said you watched like half of it, and I went to go watch it, and I was like, oh man, you need to go watch that again because there's brick walls around this facility, and they're on the ground crumbling right now. But you're right. It's something that we have not seen or have not heard, at least not publicly, the ability, and you don't want to say he doesn't have the ability to fire people up, but it's you've heard the almost like preaching the gospel a little bit on those morning practices and the Monday afternoons and things like that. But to be able to get a sneak peek of things that he says before the game and for it to sound like that, like what you're saying, against Ball State of all people, it fires you up just because it shows that he has a true excitement about this team. We're seeing, again, something that we have not seen of Hugh Freeze at Auburn. Year one was much more of the, okay, stay patient, Auburn family. We're going to get this thing figured out. Year two was, all right, we're making steps in the right direction. And to be completely honest, we've talked about this. You saw those steps, as much as it hurts to think about, you saw those steps in everything but the win column, right? That and then maybe the play calling in the second half and into the fourth quarter. Those were the two biggest things why there was so much frustration. But walking into year three, which was the year that he asked for this entire time, and you've heard so many people support this side of things. Bruce Pearl has been outspoken about it. Butch Thompson's been outspoken about it, saying that things don't just get built, even in today's day of college football. But we saw him on SEC Media Days in Atlanta, and that was the first real time that we got to see and hear everything that he had to say. And man, it sounded like that. Not obviously yelling and that level of excitement, but you could hear the confidence. You could hear the passion in the voice, and it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel fake,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
You then saw that in fall practice. You then saw that working its way into the Monday press conferences. You then see it on the field. And now you're seeing it in post-game and pre-game videos like this. It's something that the Auburn fan base has not seen from Hugh Freeze or for a head coach in quite some time. And regardless of the opponents, and I think in this it speaks even more highly that the fact that it was before Ball State, but just that home opener talking about, I mean, again, with how much tickets are, they all know that. And Hugh Freeze being able to say, man, there's kids up there that would love nothing more than to be in your position and be an Auburn Tiger. You have something to prove for them.
Well, at least in that clip, and of course there's more to it, and they don't get to film everything before pregame because some of those speeches and conversations can get pretty dialed in and fiery. But
some coaches more than others.
Yes. But what I like about it was the part that we saw and heard and the part that everybody's so fired up about, it wasn't, hey, go out and execute. Hey, yeah, go out and beat the crap out of this team that you're better than. Hey, go out and back up what you did last week against Baylor. This part of the clip had nothing to do with that. It was, hey, go out and perform for the people that paid to be here. Go out and perform for the ones who came to see you. And I think that's really cool. And we know that Hugh Freeze thinks bigger of just football and has bigger goals and aspirations than just football. He talks about that, right, with the young men that he gets to lead and the Christian side of him too, yeah, which is awesome. But he tied it into football for the first time in a while and got his team fired up, and they played like it. And I don't care that it was Ball State. It was cool. There's a different energy with him this year, and that's all fine and dandy as long as you're winning football games. And Auburn is so far, and they're hoping to do it again this weekend against South Alabama. Another coach that can get fired up at times is Kirby Smart, and he better have his team ready to go when they play Tennessee this weekend. We'll talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, who gets you ready for the Dogs and the Vols coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7. And we bring in our usual Wednesday 2:30 guest. He writes for Dogs 247. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs better than anybody. He is Jordan Hill with us now. My man, it's good to talk to you this week, and we have a lot to go over in the next several minutes, my friend.
Definitely. I appreciate you guys having me back on. And it'll be nice once we get into preview mode for this weekend because, you know, first 2 weeks for Georgia is nice to talk about some games, but we'll actually have a chance to preview some SEC action this time around.
Yes, well, we are going to do a bunch of preview for Georgia and Tennessee. It's the Dogs and the Vols in Knoxville coming up this Saturday afternoon. But before we get to that, we need to talk about how Georgia moved to 2-0 on the season. They hosted Austin Peay this past weekend there at Sanford Stadium. Are the pictures and videos going around social media of the lack of fans in the stands, are those accurate, Jordan, or are those kind of out of context?
Well, I think it's kind of hard to get a sense from this past Saturday. Now, the Marshall game in week one, I do think that the crowd turnout, especially like with the Greek section of Sanford Stadium, I don't think it quite lived up to what people around the program wanted. Now, week two, the weather was a factor. Georgia actually moved up their kickoff an hour earlier and did that, announced that on Saturday morning. So I'm sure that that affected things some. And then Georgia wound up having about a two-hour delay because of the weather. So I think that what was said during week one was totally fair when it came to attendance. Week two kind of got thrown for a loop because of the weather.
Well, then with those weather delays and moving around of kickoff times and things, that obviously impacts a team and their you know, their rituals and getting game day ready and kickoff ready and kind of the whole game plan for what you want to do on and off the football field. Georgia beats Austin Peay 28-6 last week, scoring a touchdown in each of the four quarters, only giving up a field goal in the second and the third. How much of an impact did that truly have, you think, on this Georgia game? Because I know Christian has mentioned this. When somebody looks at the final score, they're going to say, wow, that was it. That's all they did. So how much of all of that impacted this, Jordan?
You know, truthfully, I don't think a ton. I'm sure that there was a little bit of it. But, the opening drive for Georgia, Nate Frazier fumbles, and that might have, you know, maybe trying to get in rhythm and kind of get going might have been an issue. But then Georgia comes back, and I want to say the next two drives scores and tries to kind of get back in the flow of things. I don't know what the issue was on the whole, but the Georgia offense just couldn't really get it going in terms of the passing game. They actually ran the ball pretty well in that game, getting Nate Frazier and Chauncey Bowens each a couple of rushing scores. But the offense really struggled. Gunnar Stockton wasn't able to get the vertical passing game going. They threw a lot of screens, took advantage of some open receivers on the outside. And, you know, early in that game, I felt like it was really Gunnar Stockton just taking advantage of the defense. You know, they were playing off-man coverage, giving 6 or 7 yards of separation, and Georgia was perfectly happy just taking that and running with it. But as that game went on, just kind of felt like Georgia couldn't create any explosive throws. Gunnar missed some opportunities down the field. And when I say miss, I mean just didn't take any shots down the field. Missed reads going through plays, you know, was a lot more conservative than you would really expect playing an Austin Peay team. And, you know, frankly, I think it has some fans concerned going into this week just with the competition, especially on the road. But it was one of those games where I think that, wasn't quite as sharp in the passing game as Georgia wanted, but they were never really truly in danger, not really on upset alert. And I will say a positive. In addition to the run game, defense played really well, had a big fourth down goal line stop early in the fourth quarter. Defense is sitting pretty. Offense, I think, still has some work to do going into week three.
Well, you mentioned the offense again, runs for 190, and Gunnar Stockton, even though you say doesn't have the best game of his young career, it still goes 26 of 34, 227 yards through the air. But again, for those box score viewers, that's something that I love talking about because the game is not told on a box score, whether it's one way or the other. What would you say to those people that just looked at the box score, whether that was against Marshall or here against Austin Peay, of, hey, this offense is going to be fine. They are going to get tested in week three. But what would you say to give them some confidence moving into this weekend?
I think the biggest thing is trying to get a feel for how conservative Georgia sort of wanted to play that Austin Peay game. And that's something we honestly don't know. I mean, the biggest thing that I think should be encouraging for Georgia fans is that they've run the ball at a better clip. And that was an issue last year. Georgia finished the year next to last in the SEC in rushing yards per game. And that was a big point of emphasis. So I think being able to run the ball like they have, albeit against two overpowered opponents in Marshall and Austin Peay, I think that's a good sign. And I think with what Georgia has in the passing game, Gunner's potential, but also just the weapons and Colby Young and Zachariah Branch and Noah Thomas and several of the other guys, the tight ends, who surprisingly didn't have any catches in that win over Austin Peay. I don't think there's reason to panic, and I say that, but then to say that I see Saturday's game at Tennessee as a proving ground. I think they have to meet the moment. I think they have to go up and play to their potential. Otherwise, they're going to leave Knoxville with a loss.
We're talking to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7. So let's move now into what happens this weekend. It's Georgia and it's Tennessee. It's a rivalry that's gone back a long, long time, Jordan, back to literally the 1800s. I believe the first meeting was in 1899 between Georgia and Tennessee. But as of late, it's been all Dogs. They've won 8 in a row against Tennessee, but this one's in Knoxville. Tennessee's feeling pretty good about themselves. What can you tell us about the Vols that Georgia may be worried about?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is going to be the way that Georgia plays the Tennessee run. Now, obviously, Tennessee's offense has the potential to create big plays. I think Joey Aguilar, the App State turned UCLA, turned Tennessee transfer, I think he's done a really good job through two games. But really, when you look at Georgia's success in the last few years against Tennessee, it's started with stopping the run. They've done a very good job of slowing down some of Tennessee's best backs. And, you know, really in the last few years, in the last nine meetings, Georgia's only given up more than 3.8 yards per carry against Tennessee once. That was 23, and part of the reason that was above 3.8 because Jalen Ryan had a 75-yard rushing touchdown on the very first play from scrimmage. And then if you take that play out of consideration, they fell behind below that number as they have in those other meetings. So I think Tennessee's got a lot of potential. I think some folks around Georgia kind of see the Dogs dominating this rivalry and feel like that'll be the case again this year. I'm not so convinced just because of the questions on the Georgia offense. I do think that they're in good shape, that they have the potential to win this game, but I think it starts with stopping the run, putting pressure on Joey Aguilar to go out there and make the plays Tennessee has to have to win the game. He's done a good job, but again, they played a Syracuse team that struggled against UConn in week two, and they played ETSU in the second week. So definitely the biggest challenge he has faced yet as a Volunteer, and I think if they can try to make Tennessee one-dimensional, make Joey throw the ball a lot, I think that plays right into the Bulldogs' hands.
Well, that was the question that I was going to ask you, Jordan. As you mentioned stopping the run, do you expect this Georgia defense to send pressure at Joey Aguilar, try and make him as uncomfortable as possible? And then a follow-up to that, where do you see Tennessee trying to find their advantages over whether that's the Georgia offense or the Georgia defense?
I think you'll see both defenses really pressure these quarterbacks. And, you know, I think who handles it best is probably going to go a long way in determining who wins this game. And I think when I think back to Georgia's success against Tennessee last November, I mean, that was coming off of Georgia's really rough showing at Ole Miss and Georgia really needing to win to stay in the playoff hunt. They really did a good job about the second quarter on of pressuring Nico and making him uncomfortable, coming up with exotic blitzes. And I think you're going to see that with Joey Aguilar. I think that they understand that, you know, if they put pressure on him and he makes a play, Georgia's going to tip its cap and say, look, okay, you know, you went out there and we forced your hand and you were able to make a play. And I anticipate a lot of the same on Tennessee side. I think that, you know, if I'm Tennessee, I got to be licking my chops after last week just from the film that Gunnar Stockton showed, because I thought he looked hesitant at times. I thought he passed up opportunities to throw downfield. If I'm Tennessee, the number one goal on defense, make Gunnar Stockton uncomfortable, make him think twice about decisions, disguise some of your coverages, try to make him make a mistake. This is the kind of game that I really do think can be a one-possession game late. And when you have games like that, hey, you need to take some chances, try to make some opportunities to create some turnovers. Because if you steal a possession or two against a team like Georgia in a big moment like that, that could be the difference between winning and losing.
So many times, Jordan, we look at a game like this. It's week three of the season, right? Georgia has had two cupcake games that they've played in week one and week two with Marshall and Austin Peay. And so often we look at this matchup and say, well, I hope a team can get up off the mat, right? I hope this team can wake up. I hope they can go on the road and perform well. But, man, Kirby Smart and Georgia have been here so many times, and it seems like they always deliver in this type of scenario. But where I look at this in a deeper way is the fact that you play Tennessee this weekend, bye week. You still have Alabama on the schedule, Auburn on the schedule, Ole Miss, Florida, Texas, Georgia Tech. I mean, this is the start of a really tough SEC slate. So how important in your mind is it for Georgia to start SEC play 1-0?
I think it's huge, and I think, too, that the circumstances kind of set up well for Georgia to, at the very least, bring its A game and show up focused, understanding the challenge at hand. One, this being the first SEC game of the year, but the fact it's on the road, I don't think that's ever a situation that Georgia takes lightly, that they kind of think they can just kind of show up and name their score, and I think that much was clear talking to some of the players on Tuesday night coming off of practice, and we asked them what the energy's been like, and they talked about the intensity ramping up. And, you know, Monroe Freeling, the starting left tackle, he said, you know, I'd be lying if I told you that the energy was the same as it's been in the last few weeks. And, you know, Georgia takes all its opponents seriously, but they understand it needs to be kicked up a notch when you get in an SEC play, especially playing a team of Tennessee's caliber. I mean, I think Tennessee is a team that's very dangerous, and when you have to go play them on the road, that's a real challenge. But with that, the fact it's on the road, you mentioned the slate ahead and how difficult it's going to be for Georgia. And two, specifically for those guys on offense, I think they're coming in with a chip on their shoulder. They know they did not play as well as they should have against an FCS opponent. I think they know that a lot of people are questioning, hey, is Gunnar Stockton really the guy? Should we look elsewhere? Can this offense live up to super high expectations from this offseason? There's only one way to answer those questions. They have to go out there. They have to prove it. They have to go make plays against what I think is a very good Tennessee defense. And they got to string together a good four quarters to try to get out of there 3-0.
I mentioned the 8-game win streak for Georgia over Tennessee in this rivalry. Is this a game that if Georgia loses, fans are going to be like really upset about? Like, are fans going to come after Kirby Smart and the Dogs if they drop this game, again, knowing what they have ahead?
Well, I think Georgia's at the point anytime you lose, the fans are not going to be happy. But
What's that like, Jordan? We have no idea.
Yeah, I know that that's such a foreign concept for you guys in Auburn. But, no, the thing to me, I think what really matters, if we get into this game and we see an offensive shootout, let's say that Georgia loses this game 45-42, you know, fans are going to be upset, but I think they'll at least say, all right, the offense did its part. You know, the offense put up points. Now, if it's a different situation and Georgia loses like a 14-10 game, that's really where I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the coaching staff and to say, look, you know, last year there was some real missteps and some poor performances on offense over the course of the season with a veteran quarterback in Carson Beck. You know, the promise of this season was, hey, new quarterback. And, you know, even if Carson Beck's more of an NFL prospect than Gunnar Stockton, that we can work with his strengths, you know, put him in position to succeed and that this offense can succeed. So to me, that's really going to be the tale of, you know, if Georgia were to lose this game, if they lose it and the offense looks good, fans aren't going to be thrilled. But I think most of them understand, you know, now with the playoff, that a loss in week three is not going to totally end your chances to make the postseason and have a chance to win a national title. But if the offense struggles, if I see Mike Bobo's name brought up a bunch over on the junkyard, the pressure's going to be on. And the thing is, it's not going to let up because you go into a bye week and then you got Alabama coming to Sanford State.
Yep, there's a lot on the line for Georgia over the next several weeks, and it starts this weekend with a trip to Knoxville. He writes for Dogs 247, covering the Georgia Bulldogs. Jordan Hill is on the phone lines with us now. My man, tell the people where they can find all your fantastic coverage if they're looking for more information on the Georgia Bulldogs, and tell us if you're heading to Knoxville this weekend or not.
Oh, yeah, I'll be up there, so excited to get up there along with my coworker Ben Wolk. Will have live coverage there from Neyland Stadium. But dogs247.com on Twitter at Jordan Davis Dill, on Twitter at dogs247. Go follow the Junkyard Dogcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thursday morning, we will have a preview of this game with GoVols 247's Patrick Brown. A lot of good content these next few days as we continue the countdown. And yeah, like I said, glad that the start of SEC play for Georgia is just a few days away. And super excited to get to Saturday and see how this one plays out.
We appreciate your time as always, my friend. Safe travels to and from Knoxville. We're excited to have you on again next Wednesday.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs 247. Check it out at dogs247.com. He'll give you all the information you need to know for Georgia and Tennessee. And look, I think Tennessee's a really good football team, man. I do. I think Tennessee's a good team. I ain't giving too much away yet. I'm just saying, watch out for the Vols on Saturday.
I think so as well, and it's a crazy thought that, man, this bye week could come as a great gift for the Georgia Bulldogs, or it could come as excruciating pain, right, based off of what the result could be on Saturday. Because if you go out and you beat Tennessee 31-17, then all of a sudden you have that bye week before Alabama. The entire fan base feels great, and now you have 2 weeks to prepare for Alabama in Sanford Stadium in that night game that Sanford Stadium has dreamed about for a very long time. But on the flip side, if it is like what Jordan said, it's a 17-14 loss or a 14-10 loss, then all of a sudden you're licking your wounds, and now you're scared to death for 2 weeks for Alabama coming to town.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot riding on this Georgia team this weekend, and I think a lot riding on Tennessee as well, because, man, what a launch pad this could be for the Vols into their season as well. You pull up what their schedule is. I know we got to get to break, but, man, you talk about this Tennessee team, they've got Georgia before they host a bad UAB team, and I hate to say that, but it just is what it is.
Defensively especially.
Yeah, and I hate to see that for UAB, man. A storied program that really needs some help there. Then they go to Mississippi State, talking about Tennessee. They host Arkansas. I mean, what happens if Georgia wins this weekend? Or if Tennessee wins this weekend, they're 6-0 heading to Tuscaloosa.
And that's with a bye week in between Mississippi State and Arkansas. So that's... You essentially have 4 weeks after that.
Even if you lose the Alabama game, you go to Kentucky, you host Oklahoma, which who knows what Oklahoma will be by that point, hosting New Mexico State. That game on the road at Florida doesn't look as daunting right now. And then you host Vanderbilt. I'll say this right now. If Tennessee beats Georgia this weekend, they're making a push for the college football playoff. Plain and simple.
I mean, you feel if that's the case, you feel like 10-2 becomes the floor.
Absolutely. I think so. If you can beat Georgia, then you have every opportunity to beat the rest of your teams on your schedule. So, a very fun game. One of the biggest of the weekend between Georgia and Tennessee. We appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us, as he always does, on Wednesday afternoons. We'll take our final break in hour number one, come back and wrap it up, and launch ourselves into hour number two. That's here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got just about a minute, literally. We went a little long with Jordan and got some of our initial thoughts out there for Georgia-Tennessee as well. But it's been a very good first hour. Coming up in hour number two, we're going to talk some more injury things and updates for Auburn football, what we could see, what we might not see this weekend against South Alabama. And then the heart of hour number two on Wednesday afternoons is Double D Wednesday with Daryl Tapperidge of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. He's going to join us from 3:15 to 3:45, get his full thoughts on Auburn versus Ball State, what he liked, what he didn't like. We're also going to talk about South Alabama this weekend and what he wants to see, what a successful weekend looks like to him, and maybe some thoughts around the SEC as well. All of that coming up in hour number two. We'll talk to Daryl Dapperidge, 3:15 to 3:45. We're talking injury news for Auburn football to start hour number two. You can still be a part of the show if you would like. 334-321-1390. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
Production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two
wagering on the line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us and a part of the show as we're just getting underway in the second hour of today's program. And if you missed any of hour number one, you'll be able to go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show. You will have that posted for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com or just wherever you get your podcasts. You can search for On the Line. And in hour number one, we talked about what the mentality should be for Auburn this weekend versus South Alabama. What would be a successful weekend for the Tigers inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium? We also played the short clip of audio from Hugh Freeze about his fired up pregame speech to his team before Ball State. Talked about how it just seems to be a different aura for this Hugh Freeze team this year here on the Plains. And then we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, got his full thoughts on Georgia versus Tennessee this weekend. Easily one of the best games we're going to see in college football across the board this weekend. So got his thoughts on what that game means to Kirby Smart, what it means to the Dogs, and what happens if they lose an 8-game win streak against the Vols this weekend in Neyland Stadium. All of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, talking a little bit of more about the running back room, as there is reportedly a little bit more injury, but nothing overly skeptical, but just diving into what this room is going to look like on Saturday with the injuries in the room. You're going to see younger guys taking a lot more snaps here on Saturday, and possibly the South Alabama response that you're going to see, and asking the question if they're going to lighten the box and force these running backs to run, or are they going to send pressure and force Arnold to be as uncomfortable as possible inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. All of that before we get to Daryl Daprich at 3:15 for Double D Wednesday. We're going to recap Auburn and Ball State. We're going to talk about one of the most dominant Auburn wins in the program's history. Just calling it like it is. Defense answered the call. We're going to talk about some of the biggest takeaways, the biggest things that he would like to see Auburn improve on before we dive into South Alabama. Talk about possibly the trap game, possibly the running back worries, the kicking unit worries, and then is there more pressure on Jackson Arnold now? Is it going to be a little bit more in his hands than it possibly could be on some of the other games? All of that here in hour number two. He is Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7.
Yep, so if you want to call in to be a part of the show, you can. Now's your time to do it. Because once we take our 3:15 break, we'll bring Daryl Daprich on, and that'll be it. And so if you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Give us your thoughts on Auburn football, Auburn basketball, or the baseball schedule from yesterday. What games you'll be keeping an eye on this weekend across the SEC, across top 25 matchups as well. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And this running back room for Auburn, as talented as it is, my goodness, can't stay healthy, Christian. It just seems there are some worries and some concerns here with a deep running back room to start that has quickly started to be decimated. We know that Damari Alston has had the shoulder issue, was in a non-contact jersey when media got to see him yesterday. We know Darrell Robinson had the leg surgery, had to get some blood stuff figured out on Sunday, which was extremely scary for Darrell Robinson. And now there are some people saying that Jeremiah Cobb is still dealing with the hand issues, and so he may be limited or out this weekend. We'll have to see what the official reports are going to say, but all of a sudden, Auburn's deep running back room has been trimmed down to 4, 3, 2. I don't know. We're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, Jeremiah Cobb is reportedly available and has been in practice all week, but has had a little bit of a soft cast on his hand, so we have been told. Again, he had the finger injury that kept him pretty much non-contact all throughout the fall and into the 8A game. And I guess that has flared back up, whether it's a broken hand or whether it's something on that side of things. But they said that it's been limited on his ability to catch the football and to pass block. And so, yeah, you mentioned D.A., questionable, a game-time decision with the shoulder injury. You would think that if you didn't need to use Damari, then you wouldn't, just simply because you know you're going to need him for Oklahoma. Darrell Robinson, as you mentioned, with the leg surgery, and now Jeremiah Cobb, if things are completely true of what some of the rumblings that we have heard, that means that you're going to see some freshmen take a lot of snaps over the weekend. Omar Mapson, you're going to see his name and hear his, or see him on the field and hear his name quite a few times. Had 4 carries for 25 yards, I believe, against Ball State, and looked really well doing so. We've heard all about him in fall camp and how he was kind of the big name that surprised a whole lot of people. But yeah, in a weird way, you feel, you don't want to say happy, but happy that there wasn't just that one back that you had in your backfield, right? It was a running back by committee all season long, and so you feel, or all offseason long, rather, so you feel like every single one of these guys are ready, simply just because you never know when your name was truly going
to
be called.
Yeah, so trying to determine exactly what Auburn's running back room will be. Hopefully you don't overly need it this weekend, but if these are issues that linger into SEC play, especially when you go on the road, because we know a story that's as old as time, to keep yourself in the football game on the road, you run the ball, right, Hugh? You run the ball, and when you do, you give yourself a chance to open up the offense a little bit, which we know that defenses are scared of. But if Auburn's down some running backs when they go to Oklahoma next weekend, Christian, we've talked about what Brett Venables' mindset might be, which is stack the box, come after Jackson Arnold, and make Auburn win one-on-one battles. If Auburn struggles to run the football, then they may double down on that. Or, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of options they could go to.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because I guarantee that Brent Venables in Oklahoma is going to try and take a page from South Alabama, whether that's in the run game on defense or the pass game on defense, because right now there's a decision that South Alabama will make, and if that has success, you would imagine that OU would kind of double down on that. And those two things are you going to lighten the box? Are you going to force these new running backs that are fresh into college to try and run the football, to try and move and pick up first downs and take away the wide receiver units, and again, make it to where the only thing you can do is run the football? Or do you stack the box? Do you send pressure on just about every single down? You take away the run game, and you don't allow these names to even take off. You force them to pass block. You force them to mesh with the offensive line, and you force Jackson Arnold to become uncomfortable, whether that's throwing short balls, whether that's throwing balls over the middle, or whether that's throwing the deep balls that we've still been yet to see.
Which, I'll say this, if Omar Mapson is the main guy this weekend for whatever reason, what a blessing it is for him to get his most reps in his young career against South Alabama, yeah, right? Not against an SEC opponent, where you feel, as an SEC-level running back, believe me, I saw this dude, and most people have seen him now, he's legit. He can run in college. He can bounce off of people in college. He can hit the gaps in college. If this is the game he gets the most carries all season, good. That's a good thing. Auburn trusts him to run the football if that's what they have to do. But to your point, and kind of what I was alluding to as well, man, this is something that Oklahoma is going to keep a big eye on this weekend. Who does Oklahoma play this weekend? They play at Temple.
It's the 11 a.m. game, isn't it?
Yes, 11 a.m. ESPN2 in Philadelphia. They're going to Temple, who is 2-0 on the season after beating UMass and Howard, baby. Woo! Oklahoma is a 21.5-point favorite on the road, by the way.
So it jumped. I think it was like 17.5 when it opened.
Really? It's 21.5 now. People jumping on Oklahoma big time. But regardless, Oklahoma will keep their eyes out for what Auburn does and what South Alabama does. Even when I was saying it, I feel like if Auburn has a hard time running the ball against South Alabama, or if there's any sort of question marks on what the running back room's health status will be in Norman next week, Venables could just rush three or four and drop back and really make it a tough day to throw the football and could stagnate Auburn's offense.
Yeah.
That's scary to think about.
Make it to where we're going to just about blanket every single receiver you have, and we'll keep our two linebackers right in there almost as running back spies, if
yeah.
you will,
yeah.
to plug the holes that our 4-3 can't get to. And if you want to get 2 yards a carry, you'll live for that all day.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So we'll keep you updated on that. We'll also talk to Darryl Daprich about the running back room health, the secondary health, the team's overall performance last week against Ball State, and what he wants to see versus South Alabama. Double D, Darryl Daprich from Locked On Auburn and The Barn. He joins us coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Oh, it's one of our favorite times of the week. We get to bring on our man, Double D, Darryl Daprich from Locked On Auburn and The Barn. He joins us every Wednesday, 315 to 345, back-to-back segments with Darryl Daprich. My man, I hope you are doing well on this Wednesday. I know there's a lot going on outside the sports world, but I'm hoping we get a chance to talk some good news on the sports side of things, my friend.
Yeah, let's just focus on the sports. I ain't going to lie to you, could be better. But sports is hopefully what are offered as a distraction and a unification. So it's good to talk about that.
Yes, sir. We appreciate you and your time as always. And there is a lot to get to regarding Auburn football, of course. And we got our tradition back together and sitting next to each other. Christian Jable to join us this year up in the press box at Jordan-Hare last weekend. So it was really good to see you. And I must have missed when you were eating on some Chex Mix or some Gorditos or the Mike and Ike's. I must have missed when you busted those out.
Did not bring him up there. I mean, it was a silent protest that if my guy, Jacob Goins, wasn't going to be next to me like I thought at one point, well, I'm not bringing that stuff.
I understand.
That's the tradition. I mean, you know, so yeah, I was, if I know you're up there, that they will we will reinstitute that in the upcoming weeks.
A tradition like no other. The Masters holds nothing on Jacob and Darryl eating rye chips out of a Gorditos bag. And so
there you go.
We were not eating those, but we were watching Auburn beat Ball State in what is statistically, Darryl, one of the most dominant victories Auburn football has ever had on the defensive side of the ball for what they were able to do and limit Ball State offensively. Man, tell us your thoughts overall. Now that you've had some days to kind of sit and marinate with it a little bit, what you saw between Auburn and Ball State.
Well, it was an extremely, extremely dominating defensive performance. And I think there's a combination, you know, like I always say, you know, two things can be true at once. I think Auburn's defense is really rounding into shape. I love the linebackers. Xavier Atkins has been just an absolute find to go along with Riddick. The secondary is playing well. Sylvester Smith was just absolutely laying the wood. Crawford coming off the edge is playing really, really well. Kieron Crawford, the defensive line was holding up. So there are a lot of things to be encouraged by with the way the defense played. I will say Ball State's probably one of the most offensively challenged and deficient football teams I've seen in a long time. I mean, there was no threat of a passing game. And Auburn was able to pin its ears back. They run that quarterback a lot. They run the quarterback draw. And Auburn was just ready for it and stopped it time after time after time. There was no room for that quarterback to run. And they refused to go wide on Auburn. And I think that's because of Auburn's team speed. So all in all, great defensive performance, a lot better than, you know, what we saw the previous week. But my goodness, look how that played out. Look what Baylor did to SMU.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to tell people that this is a really, really good offense. And Baylor was even more efficient against SMU than they were against Auburn. So looking back on it now, not such a bad thing to hold them to 24 points. When they scored 38 even before overtime on SMU, Baylor did. So I think the defense is starting to round into shape a little bit.
And, Darryl, how nice is it, too, when you think of Auburn's success on the defensive side of the football field, you think about the top 10 pick, right? You think about Keldrick Faulk, where he's had so much attention in both of these games, in Waco and at home against Ball State. His stat line is he has 5 tackles and he has a sack, and that sack coming against Baylor on the chase down. But because there's so much attention going to Keldrick Faulk, the edge, nowhere number 15, all of these other guys, you mentioned some of the linebackers, the other guys up front, some of these guys are really, really starting to eat on that defensive side of the football field because they can beat guys one-on-one.
I really felt like Keyron Crawford was going to be the one that benefited the most of all the preseason Keldrick Faulk accolades. I mean, especially if they start doubling him. Remember, Auburn's leading the nation in sacks right now, and they're doing it without bringing any safety blitzes or anything like that. So maybe that's up Durkin's sleeve, and we don't even know it yet. Crawford and even just the defensive line is getting natural push and collapsing the pocket. They did it against Baylor. I mean, you can talk about what a great game Sawyer Robertson had, and he did, and he threw for 400 yards, but he got sacked 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, Auburn's pressure is there, and it's going to have to be there against South Alabama. South Alabama's got, you know, I would say they're a lot better athletes than Ball State. They're a better football team than Ball State. They come from a conference that traditionally gives Power Four schools trouble. I suspect Auburn should win and win comfortably. But like I said on Zach's show, I think there's going to be a point in this game early on, and maybe even for a half, where it's not comfortable. And Auburn's just going to have to stay the course, do what they do, and let depth and talent kind of overtake that to where it does get extended. But, yeah, I mean, the ability to rush the quarterback and have the kind of secondary that Auburn has will pay dividends at some point down the road against an SEC opponent.
Well, Darryl, you look at these two games, and one thing that we've talked about this week is the fact that against Baylor, Auburn ran the ball, and hardly threw it and took what the defense gave them. And then against Ball State, while we figured there would be a heavy focus on the passing game, that's what Ball State allowed them to do, was throw those out routes, throw it 6, 8, 10 yards, and take those chunk plays and move the football down the field. Is that encouraging to you that Hugh Freeze, through two games, has won it two different ways, and what South Alabama could throw at this Tigers team this weekend?
Yeah, and I think there's a third way to win that he hasn't showed yet either. Remember, Auburn has not really, really worked, has shown the vertical game or the middle of the field. And so at some point, I think you can't cover every aspect of a football field. You're going to have to pick your poison. And when Auburn goes RPO, they're going to really have to decide whether they want Cobb and when Alston is healthy to beat them, or Arnold with his legs, or do you start cheating up and that leaves the middle of the field open in the vertical pass game? Because right now, Auburn's doing a great job of taking what the defense gives them, and it's out wide. It's to the boundaries. A lot of quick hitters, a lot of deep out patterns, that kind of stuff. It's there, so take it. If people start overplaying that and start to try to take that away, then I think the vertical and in the middle of the field will be open, and then that adds a whole new wrinkle. Remember, we talked about it, or I put it on social media last week, that we saw such a steady diet of Singleton in jet sweep motion, and Arnold could either hand it to him or keep it, and it worked like a charm against Baylor. It was unstoppable. And I remember saying, you can still throw off this too. And that's exactly what Auburn did. You know, they faked it to Singleton.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Arnold did that little drop step like he was taking off, and then stepped back in the pocket, threw the wheel route to Singleton, and it was wide open. Well, you put that on film now for a defensive coordinator to have to worry about and say, now there's three ways when we see that motion and when we see that formation. Well, there's a fourth. I mean, Cam Coleman is wide open on the backside on a slant off of that. I mean, you guys know how many times you see a quick RPO slant. It's undefendable.
Yeah.
You fake the handoff, pull it out, boom, 8-yard slant. You do that to Coleman up the seam, and it may be taillight. So there's a lot of things now that they're starting to evolve and they're starting to put on tape that I think defensive coordinators are going to have to pick their poison, and I'm liking the balance and the versatility.
We're talking with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn here on ESPN 106.7. And before we get to our bottom of the hour break, we'll come back and talk more about South Alabama, what Auburn could do, maybe what they should do before the Oklahoma game, and then your takes on some other teams around the SEC. Are you concerned with the now injury bug that seems to be moving its way through the Auburn running back room, right? We know Damari Alston still dealing with the shoulder injury, Darrell Robinson with the freak accident injury thing. I don't even know how to correctly describe what happened to him, and it's super scary what he had to go through. And now some of the reports coming out about Jeremiah Cobb dealing with the hand issue. I mean, are you concerned with Auburn's running back room and how limited it could be?
Well, I would get concerned if it gets into the SEC play and you only got one or two healthy backs. I think, you know, from the reports that I have at practice, if it was an SEC game Saturday, Alston could play. I don't think the hand thing is supposed to keep Cobb out of the game at all. I think you've got Omar Mapson, who looked really, really good in his limited time against Ball State. I think two running backs, Cobb and Mapson, should be enough. With the threat of Arnold running and a viable passing game to beat a group of five opponent. Where you want to make sure and where I'd be worried about it is when you get into Oklahoma and you go to Norman, you're going to need all three backs. So I think, you know, it's one of those situations where you dress Alston, you dress Damari Alston, and you have him in one of those things in case of emergency break glass, right? Hopefully, you don't need him against South Alabama, but if it becomes a Georgia State scenario from a few years ago, you have to play him in the second half or whatever. I don't anticipate that happening, but I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't dressed out and, you know, just in case of an emergency Saturday situation.
All right, we'll see what happens with Auburn's running back room as they head into South Alabama this weekend. We'll talk more with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn right after this. We'll get his thoughts on the special teams, talk about some injury concerns. There's a kicking battle going on right now on the Plains. We'll talk about that, plus some other teams around the Southeastern Conference and what Auburn's mindset should be before they play Oklahoma this time next week. Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn in the Barn. He's with us for another segment right after this.
Halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We got our man Daryl Dapperich, Double D, on the phone lines for another segment as well. My man, tell the people where you are, what you got going on, and how people can find you here over the next several days.
Yeah, Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked On Auburn with Zach Blackerby, wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube. And then, of course, we've been doing this for 3 years now. The reaction shows that we do right after the football games, we do them, we record them after the games from the press box, and then we drop them Sunday morning. So hard to believe it's been 3 years since we've done that, and it has been. So that's kind of like the alternative to the Sunday morning newspaper that we used to read after the games that dropped on your doorstep bright and early. You can find me Monday mornings as well, 7:10 with Ben Taylor, 7:10 a.m. in the morning.
Well, we always enjoy your visits with us and always appreciate your time as well. And a couple of other things we want to get to with you today. We were talking about the injury problems with the running back room, but Daryl, we're going into week three of the season, and Auburn has a kicking battle on its hands. I mean, that's not a spot that Auburn football has really been in all that often, but with the constant struggles with McPherson and his health, which we're still hoping that all gets worked out for him to, I mean, just just live a normal life, much less be able to kick a football really far. But trying to get that stuff figured out, plus Towns Magoo, of course, hurt himself last week by what appeared to be kicking the ground before the ball and injured himself. And now you've got a kid who transfers in from Southern Miss. I mean, are you concerned with what Auburn has going on or doesn't have going on in the kicking room?
I'm concerned from about 35, 40 yards out. I think Gibbs has got a really strong leg, and at Southern Miss last year, he kicked the heck out of the ball and had a really efficient field goal percentage. And I know at certain levels of football, you say, okay, well, this is the SEC, right? But punting and kicking, to me, it doesn't matter if you do it at the FCS level or at the highest level, kicking a football is kicking a football. So from a field goal percentage, from a field goal perspective, I think that, you know, the kid was effective at Southern Miss. You give him a shot. You let him kick 40 yards. I'm like I said, McPherson is money, probably within 35 yards and in. Anything over that, I'd probably let Gibbs give it a shot Saturday at Southern against South Alabama. Towns just, you know, his plant leg, rolled that ankle. Don't know how healthy that is. Don't know if that's the reason why the kick came up short, because he's got a boomer of a leg. But keep in mind, even on the kickoffs, Jacob, Towns was not reaching the end zone.
Yeah.
Gibbs comes in and puts all three kicks in the back of the end zone. So I think you have to kind of go with Gibbs, you know, as far as your long distance kicker, and McPherson still with extra points in short range.
You obviously, Daryl, don't want to get to the point where you're hoping that you stall your offense at the 30-yard line against South Alabama, but at what point do you try and build some sort of confidence outside of just practice? Because we've heard that even just kicks during practice haven't necessarily been overly successful. Where do you try and draw that line? Because, Daryl, there's going to be a point later on in the season, whether that's in Norman, whether that's back at home against Georgia, where it's halfway through the fourth quarter and a 45-yard field goal is going to have to be made.
Yeah, I think I would try some long ones. I think instead of going for it maybe on fourth and five or fourth and four from the 35-yard line, I'd let him try to kick a 52-yarder.
Sure.
Especially with the way your defense is playing, right? And, you know, obviously, if you have a chance to put the game away and it's fourth and two and they're not stopping you on the ground, just keep pounding the rock and don't try to kick a field goal. But you bring up an excellent point. You don't want it to be the litmus test while you're on the road in Norman in a tie ball game with a minute and a half left to go in the fourth quarter, and you need a 45-yarder.
Yep.
And you're like, who's kicking it? So it's a real, real touchy situation. I probably, later in the game, if the game's in hand, would have an opportunity to try to let him kick a 45-yarder or a 50-yarder, probably let him line up and kick it, even if it looked like you're padding points, or you have to figure out and find out if somebody is capable from that range, because like you said, you're going to need it in some ball games down the road.
Before we get your full thoughts for this weekend, again, we're talking with Daryl Dappert of Locked On Auburn in the Barn here on ESPN 106.7. Before we get your full thoughts on this weekend versus South Alabama, Daryl, are there a team or maybe a couple of teams around the Southeastern Conference that have your eye, good or bad, that you've seen and maybe going into some crucial matchups this weekend?
I think Oklahoma's better than I thought they were going to be. I'm surprised okay. They manhandled Michigan like they did. Now, we don't know if Michigan is a 7-5 Michigan or a Michigan that'll compete for the Big Ten title. That is yet to be determined. South Carolina was a little bit, I think, disappointing with the way they played against South Carolina State. Ole Miss, still struggling with Kentucky, probably a little bit underwhelming. But I think that, again, very impressed with Oklahoma. Don't know about Texas. Verdict's still out. They beat San Jose State, you know. So Mississippi State has been the team to me, though, besides Auburn, that's been the biggest surprise. I did not foresee them beating Arizona State with that quarterback. I know they lost Scataboo, but that quarterback, Levitt's pretty good. And I know it was in Starkville, but I was – and look, it was just one of those situations where me and you were sitting next to each other in the presser, and I just was like, I did not think after Arizona State kicked that field goal to go up, I thought it was over. Mm-hmm. So Mississippi State, Auburn – And I think Oklahoma have been the three biggest surprises. I think definitely South Carolina and Ole Miss still have a little bit something to prove to see if they're worthy of what they had in their rankings. And Missouri beating Kansas. But again, we don't know what Kansas is yet. We don't, just because that's a rivalry game and it's a border war, Kansas may be 4-7, 4-8. You know, we don't know what Kansas has. So just a lot of unknowns, a lot of question marks going into the SEC tilt here.
This might be something that you give your full prediction on later in the week, but your thoughts on the game in Knoxville with Georgia and Tennessee. Georgia not necessarily looking great on the scoreboard, only beating Austin Peay 28-6. We just got done talking with Jordan Hill and said that they're still trying to build some offensive confidence rather than on the other side. Josh Heupel with Joey Aguilar seemed to be finding the end zone a whole lot. Do you have an opening thought on that one?
I think Tennessee has a real shot to win that game. I think this is a year that Georgia could struggle. Remember, it might have been the COVID year. I think it was. Florida won the East and played Alabama in the championship. And I think it's one of the only years that Georgia did not, when they were the East, when it was East and West. Mm-hmm. This could be another one of those years where Georgia takes a step back and doesn't get to the SEC title game. Where a, you know, Tennessee, because there's all these teams above them now, that there's, it's not an East-West thing. So it doesn't just have to be a Tennessee. It could be a Texas and an LSU that finishes ahead of them, right? I mean, it's just the two best teams. And they benefited a lot over the years of playing in a watered-down East. So the Austin Peay game to me was telling, 28-6. You know, I think that there's some issues there, and I think Tennessee has a real shot and could expose some weaknesses in Georgia's defense.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where we sit, Darryl. We haven't made our official picks yet, but we have definitely alluded to the idea that Tennessee is a good football team and could expose some of those bad parts of the Georgia team, and this is Georgia's, of course, first real test of the season as well. Before we let you get out of here, Darryl, final thoughts on Auburn versus South Alabama. We asked the question earlier in the show to our listeners and want to ask us to you and open it up to you on the way out here. A successful weekend for Auburn against South Alabama looks like what?
Get it in the 40s. Have a quick start. Don't let South Alabama believe in themselves and hang around like Troy did against Clemson and some other Sun Belt teams have done against Power Fours. If it's, you know, my prediction is like a 45-21 type score. Make that 45-21 be a backdoor touchdown when Auburn's up 45-14. I want to see, it's successful to me, if some of these younger kids and some of these backups get in earlier. Because let's be honest, guys, we talked about it in the press box. I don't think anybody anticipated that Auburn's backups weren't going to get in until the start of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I think the plan was, and I know the coaching staff wanted them in earlier. So I'd like to see a Deuce Knight. I'd like to see, you know, maybe if Alvin Henderson makes his debut, a Sam Turner, or Bryce Kane, these guys get in at some point late in the third quarter, and I think you'll have, you know, that could be considered a successful day, a successful homecoming as you're getting ready for Norman.
We'll see how it goes. Auburn and South Alabama this weekend, 11:45, an early kick there at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And Darryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn will be there. He'll be covering it. He'll be doing a bunch of stuff. Plug it all one more time, and we'll let you get out of here a few minutes early, my friend.
Wednesdays, Fridays, Locked On Auburn, Sunday nights, 8 o'clock live on the Barn with Kyle Rush and Zach Blackerby. And then we do the reaction show that'll drop Sunday mornings on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast.
Darryl, we appreciate you and your time, my friend. Have a good rest
of
your
buddy.
Week, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday. Darryl Dapper, it's Locked On Auburn in the Barn. Check it out however you want to find it, as he said there as well. Christian, your thoughts on what Darryl had to say for at least this weekend. He says he wants to see some of the backups earlier in this game, but also didn't predict a crazy score either. Has Auburn winning comfortably, but one of those games where, kind of like we've said, we just kind of want to get in and get out, right?
Right. That's from the fan perspective, that's what you're allowed to wish for, things like that. I don't think as a coaching staff and as a player, I think that's what That's what gives you that rat poison mentality of let me just get in and get out, because then all of a sudden you're going to have yourself a dang good football game halfway through the fourth quarter, and it's going to take a touchdown and a defensive stop for you to walk out of your own stadium pretty happy. I think if you can, again, get into the high 30s and the 40s, I think you obviously put yourself at a very good chance to win the football game, and you put yourself at a very good opportunity to win the football game. But it's just the idea of, man, making sure that this opponent is just not taken lightly. Otherwise, you're going to see one of those Louisiana Tech LSU games or the Clemson Troy game, and that's the last thing that you want, because then some of the question marks that you feel like people have begun to tuck away then re-rise to the surface before you go and play a really good Oklahoma team at their place.
And that's what we're going to talk about the rest of the week, is how much can Auburn look past South Alabama, right? Are there certain things that Auburn could or maybe should work on to get ready for Oklahoma? I mean, there are coaches in that building, Christian, that have already started looking at Oklahoma. Let's just call it like it is. They've at least seen some of the film. They watched the Oklahoma-Michigan game, at least went back and watched it. The teams are playing at the same time, obviously, but they went back and watched it. I mean, they know what Oklahoma is going to do, and you're not going to learn a whole lot more about Oklahoma against Temple this weekend.
And that's what I was going to say, and vice versa. You know that the people in the OU room have already been looking at Auburn tape. They've gone back to last year and seen what Jackson Arnold looked like in some of these games. And, man, it makes it such an interesting story because, like we talked about, Brent Venables is a defensive mindset or a defensive mind coach, and was able to coach Jackson Arnold for a year, be able to show him his entire hand on the defensive side of the football. And that was honestly a big conversation piece of why Jackson was unable to build any sort of confidence, because it was Brent Venables saying, you know what, welcome to the SEC. Welcome to what teams are going to show you. We're going to show you every single thing that we have. But Brent Venables saw what worked and also saw what didn't work. And so you could use that both as a pro and a con for both of these teams. And so while both have already done their scouting for each other, and you're going to be able to implement that late this week and early into next week, both of these teams, again, three touchdown plus favorites, but you still have to make sure that you take care of business, and especially being with health being a concern, making sure you're doing everything the right way.
We'll take our final break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, and we'll wrap it up right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Daryl Dappert for joining us, as he does every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45, two segments each and every Wednesday. Appreciate him hopping on, talking some ball. Also, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Who joined us in hour number one to talk about Georgia versus Tennessee in a game that, I mean, I think it's the biggest game of the weekend, really. But there are several good ones, but Jordan will be in Knoxville at Neyland Stadium to cover Georgia versus Tennessee. So we talked to him in hour number one. Also talked about the injury issues that Auburn is running into, whether it's the running back room or the kicking room today. Just the mentality as well for Auburn versus South Alabama this weekend. So all of that on the show today. If you missed it, you can go back and check it out on the podcast at ESPNAU.com.
Man, talking about the defense was a big conversation point in week one, or in the first hour. Daryl talked about it as well. And, man, you dive into what this team does statistically. Auburn defense leads the SEC and is tied for first nationally in the country with 10 sacks, and also leads the SEC with 19 tackles for loss. You go back and you compare what Auburn did last year. They had 28 sacks and 68 tackles for loss. Again, already have 10 and 19 this year. They are on pace to almost double both of those here in the 2025 season. Yeah. So you want to talk about what could be the biggest strength or the biggest upgrade from last year's team to this year's team, at least so far through two games? You feel like that could be a very, very big part of a lot of success? I mean, you've seen it so far, and yes, Baylor put up 24 points, but the ability for Auburn to get after the quarterback is going to be so, so crucial, especially later down the stretch in SEC play with John Mateer, with guys like Marcel Reed, who can maneuver the pocket, who can work their way, will also throw the ball downfield. And again, just the stat that Keldrick Faulk has one sack and one tackle for loss through two games. Yeah. But you've seen so many other guys step up. And in SEC play, when you see things like that, you're not going to be able to throw two guys at Keldrick Faulk and make it to where the running back chips him on his way by running a route. I mean, it's going to be one-on-one, and that's when you're going to see number 15 prove why he's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, you start looking at what Auburn has coming up on the schedule in terms of quarterbacks. John Mateer next weekend, Marcel Reed the following weekend for Texas A&M, Stetson, you're going to have for Georgia, you've got Pribula for Missouri, Gunnar Stockton for Georgia, you'll have Pribula for Missouri, Talen Green for Arkansas. I assume it will still be Zach Calzada for Kentucky, but I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like. It will be Diego Pavia for Vanderbilt, and then the other SEC game with Alabama. If Ty Simpson's still the guys, we'll see, because Keelan Russell got some playing time this weekend for Alabama, so we'll see if that quarterback room changes, especially if they struggle this weekend with Wisconsin. Is that a game? I know we got a couple of minutes here. Is that a game, Alabama versus Wisconsin? Ain't nobody talking about that game. Anybody worried about Wisconsin coming to Tuscaloosa, T-Town? Alabama, last time I looked, Christian, in this game, Alabama hosting Wisconsin. Last time I looked, the Crimson Tide were about 3 touchdown favorites. Looks like right now it's down to 19.5, according to ESPN, but I'm sure you could get it different in different books. But stop me if we've heard this before, that Alabama playing a P4 team at a conference, multi-score favorites. Nobody's talking about it. Is this a room for concern yet again for the Crimson Tide and Kalen DeBoer after, I mean, they did drop 70-plus points last week. I mean, they just got everything figured out in Tuscaloosa, right? I mean, is this a game that Alabama and Alabama fans should be worried? Because, my goodness, Alabama starts 1-2, and Tide fans are going to call for Kalen DeBoer. They're going to call for his job. They're saying he's done. He's out at
Alabama.
They
haven't already.
Yeah, I mean, they already have, some of them. But you start 1-2 this season, he's done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Wisconsin did not look good in their opener against Miami, Ohio. Beat them 17-0. I'm pretty sure that game was 3-0 at halftime. You then respond, beat Middle Tennessee 42-10 before, yeah, you make your way to Tuscaloosa here on Saturday, the 11 a.m. kick. Again, it does. You don't feel like Wisconsin and Florida State are on a comparable playing field, at least as of this season and going into it, and then especially as of right now, especially offensively. But yeah, to your point, there's not that security blanket. There's no net that catches anybody if they fall in this game, and that's why you think that Alabama fans were so shocked and so visibly upset with the Florida State loss. I think Gus Malzahn obviously played a factor in that, but we talked about it, of how there was such a confidence factor towards Alabama getting the job done in Tallahassee to where that loss hurt that much more. Mm-hmm. You hope that, again, that's not necessarily the story. Ryan Williams is supposed to be out again with a concussion protocol to miss this game.
He took a shot, man.
Actually, they said he might return for this game on Saturday, but still definitely a story that we're going to keep up with, and it'll be definitely an interesting game on Saturday.
Yeah, it's just one that you would think Kalen DeBoer and his staff would have so much focus and attention on. It's like, if I'm Kalen DeBoer, I go into this game this Saturday with my job on the line. Like, my job is on the line. That's how I would treat it. I would, if I'm Kalen DeBoer in Alabama. Because you lose this game, and they might just fire you right then and there. Especially at home in Tuscaloosa. In a game that Alabama won handedly last year because Wisconsin's quarterback got hurt on the first drive of the game.
Yeah.
So, there's that, man. Look, we appreciate you being with us today. And, unfortunately, on a station at a show, we like talking sports. The fact that there are bigger stories and news lines taking place that we simply just can't discuss, it's unfortunate in a world that we're living in. And so when I say stay safe, I mean it. Take care of yourself. Take care of your people. That's all I can say. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to our wonderful guests. Thanks to you for listening. And we are back tomorrow for another episode. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you later.